here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
So you want to listen to something interesting for a while. So you've come here to Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, maybe just hanging on after enjoying Kipper the Cat for the past 2 hours with Greg and Tony. Well, all I can say is come along with us now. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this is Evening Under Lamplight, and you're invited to attend because, after all, remember, you need feet to keep your legs from fraying at the end. Well, that's my new motto I've just learned tonight from Kipper the Cat. Oh, yes, remember, you can get in touch by email at lamplight@cambridge105.co.uk and can check out the archives of our show at momentsunderlamplight.co.uk. It's always good to visit the archives. Lots of good things there, if I say so myself. In fact, just this past week, I happened to be listening to episodes 126 and 127, which attended to some of the later sections of Whitman's Song of Myself, and lots of other things as well. Episode 126, called You, Me, and All, that's a line from Whitman himself, also featured a reading and discussion of one of Robert Louis Stevenson's most fascinating fables, Something in It. And I thought I did a fine job talking about that fable and about Whitman too. And if I thought it was a great job, then it must be a great job because I'm a pretty tough critic. You're invited to attend to those episodes too, of course. Find them on the website. That's momentsunderlamplight.co.uk and click on the Evening Under Lamplight link. And this evening, Under Lamplight, we continue with Dante's Descent Through the Inferno. What can I say? It gets more and more dreadful the deeper we go, as we should expect it to. Our latest region of the Inferno features what my wife told me was material unsuitable for discussion, bordering on the pornographic. Not pornographic in the sexy sense, but in the sense of obscenely gruesome. But we can't just skip over it, though, because it's gruesome. This is Dante's Divine Comedy, after all, a great work of literature, and part of its greatness is that it is not afraid to treat of the most bloody topics and to draw those topics into the general scheme of the poem. So it's not full of disfigurement and bloodshed for its own sake, but as emblems of a certain state of the ruined human soul. We all have something of this within us, I'm afraid, and Dante is giving us imagery that will help us understand what's going on inside us. The more gruesome it is, the more we hope we will reject it when we spot it in ourselves. And yes, here's my disclaimer, in case you're a little squeamish about bloody images. You know I'll treat them in a responsible way, but still, if you want to leave now, well, I won't stop you, even if I could. Now, Dante wants to impress on us the extreme bloodiness of this bolgia, or ditch, in the eighth circle of the Inferno. Who could tell the blood and wounds that I saw now, he says. Well, no one could tell, this is the implied answer to his question, for neither thought nor speech has the capacity to hold so much, he says. But Dante's going to have a try himself at telling us this. And first, to give us some idea, he runs through a catalogue of infamous Italian battles, ancient and contemporary, known for the amount of blood shed there. And, well, we, of course, can supply our own proud history of bloodshed, couldn't we? Nothing those medieval Italians did that we can't do better. We can cite the slaughter of two world wars, or Pol Pot in the killing fields, and all the enormous incidents of genocide in Armenia, in so many parts of Africa, in Europe, across the American continent, north and south. We know these images and have been burned by them. And Dante hopes to reawaken our horror to start this canto. For here we find those who were sowers of discord, people who stirred up hostility in the community or just between individuals, destroying the peace, destroying any chance for unity, cooperation, joyfulness. In Dorothy Sayers' words, these are the fanatics of party, seeing the world in a false perspective, and ready to rip up the whole fabric of society to gratify a sectional egotism. Sound familiar today? And here in hell, they carry the emblem of what they did on earth. Their bodies are lacerated, open gashes, lopped off limbs and more. And that's what we have in store for ourselves this evening. But first, I wanted to have a little light-hearted segment, if this is possible. Surely I could find some songs about, say, that third party who comes in and sows discord, busting up an otherwise happy relationship. But actually, there weren't too many. There's Jimmy Mack by Martha and the Vandellas, about this guy who's trying to wear her resistance down while her boyfriend, Jimmy Mack, is away somewhere. Jimmy, Jimmy Mack, when are you coming back? And she's not getting any stronger. She can't hold out very much longer. What's going to happen? This guy talks just as sweet as Jimmy does. He's trying to sow discord. Is he going to succeed? It's left unresolved, but that's not the point. The sower of discord doesn't have to succeed in order to be damned. It's his intentions that count. It's what he turns his will to that will save or damn the soul. Well, this gives us a different perspective on this little Motown hit. Let's attend to the song and see what we find. If nothing else, it's a good example of the way Motown in the mid-60s brought up the bass and the beat to the forefront to catch the kids. The music of young America, the record labels used to say.
I promise I do.
Martha and the Vandellas, Jimmy Mack. But it seems we can't get away from bloodshed, or warfare anyway, this evening. Jimmy Mack was recorded in 1964, but the Motown censors held it back. Listeners might have assumed that she was begging Jimmy Mack to hurry back from Vietnam. And the Motown publicity people didn't want to be associated with this conflict. Soldiers shouldn't be hurrying back, but staying out there, gallantly dying for the flag. But in 1967, when the song was finally released, the Motown people could assume that their listeners' sympathies had changed, and everyone wanted the troops to hurry back. The discord between the U.S. administration and the people was already growing. No one had to sow anything at this point. So that was Motown's contribution to people who try to sow discord in relationships. Before we move on to Dante, let's have two country songs. In these two songs, it's not a man who's coming in to seduce the woman away from her man, but another woman sowing discord by seducing the man, breaking up the relationship that way. First, let's have Dolly Parton's Jolene. Great name. Where would you find such a name except in a country song? Jolene, please don't take my man just because you can. Jolene's beautiful. It's not really fair because she can just walk in and take any man she wants. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Oh, that look. Well, her other features are irresistible, too. Your smile's like a breath of spring. Your voice is soft as summer rain. And I cannot compete with you, Jolene. And then, uh-oh, he talks about you in his sleep. It's gone that far. She's really clinging on in desperation. You could have your choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. In other words, I'm a faithful lover and you're just a slut. Is that what's under the surface here? And the man himself, does he get any say in this? He's just a cipher, a guy she loves, but he seems to have no power, no say in what's going on. It's just between the two women. And she concludes, I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene. Oh, notice that she too has no power, no say in what's going on. Jolene, the glamorous babe, playing the role perhaps of the devil's substitute, has all the power. It's all up to her. Will she sow discord or will she respect a sister's plea not to take her man, even though she can?
Beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. Easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.
That's a strange ending. Now, of course, there's no resolution. That would spoil the pathos and would spoil that lovely, vulnerable voice Dolly Parton likes to put on. Okay, now, here's a voice that's not vulnerable, but wise. Wise from painful experience, no doubt. We have to attend here to my favourite, Tammy Wynette, who's talking woman to woman. But unlike Dolly Parton, she's not talking to the woman who's sowing discord, but to another woman, less experienced, more vulnerable. She's giving advice. This is a painful world with predatory women around, just ready to sow discord. The song, it seems to me, is predatory itself, playing on women's insecurities. There's always going to be another woman more attractive than you, the song says. If you think you got your man in the palm of your hand, you'd better listen. And if you think you got it made and his love will never fade, you better listen. And here Tammy cranks up her voice from deep, deep in her heart. She, that mysterious, prowling she's out there too, and she's a whole lot better looking than me and you. And she can do things to a man you never dreamed a woman can do. If that doesn't get that woman's insecurities, I don't know what will. If you think you keep your man with a golden wedding band, you better listen. And if you're sitting there at home thinking how good you turn him on, you better listen. She's sweet when she talks, and she bounces all over when she walks. And she's forgot more about a man than your sweet mama ever told you. I'm talking woman to woman, heart to heart. Yeah, she's talking woman to woman, heart to heart, and she can take it or leave it, but nevertheless it's true, woman to woman, me to you. There are a lot of other songs called woman to woman, but here's my favorite from, as you've heard, Tammy Wynette.
I'm talking
to heart. I'm singing straight to you. And you can take it or leave it.
There we are. Some good advice, I think. There are all those sowers of discord out there, though Tammy Wynette doesn't really tell her woman that there's anything anyone can do about it. Maybe that's the prevailing outlook of these country songs. We're helpless in a world of people more powerful than we are, who are out to break up whatever happiness that manages to come our way. Perhaps that's why demagogues like Donald Trump, with their promises to help, but not requiring you to expend any thought for yourself, maybe that's why they can be so appealing. Well, so much for these songs. Now it's time to move on to Dante. We're here in Canto 28 of Dante's Inferno. I've already mentioned the way Dante opens the canto by announcing that no one can describe the amount of blood and wounds he saw here, and then describing this himself. Remember, now, he and Virgil are standing on the bridge, crossing over this huge circular ditch, looking down onto the figures running around there. The first person he describes has his chest split open, right from his chin down to where he farts, as Dante tells us, and his entrails are spilling out, dangling between his legs, including the grim sack that turns what one has swallowed into shit. You see that Dante has to descend to crude language to convey the baseness of this area. And by the way, I've heard that someone has complained about the language we've been using here, but I'm merely being faithful to Dante. I could say it in Italian if you'd prefer. One of the very greatest writers in the world, and if Dante descends low, we too go low, or we lose the spirit of what he's telling us. To be offended by this is, I think, to be a little too sentimental. Okay, this guy notices Dante looking at him and exhibits himself further, ripping open his chest even wider, saying, "You see how I rip myself open? You see how mangled is Muhammad?" Who? Yes, this is Muhammad. And as he tells Dante, up ahead of him is his son-in-law Ali, whose face is split open from the chin to the brow. Why these two here? Well, we have to understand the medieval view of Muhammad, who was regarded as a Christian, maybe even, they thought, a bishop, who broke apart the Christian unity, sowing discord by founding a breakaway sect, not a whole new religion. And Ali, who became the leader of the Muslims sometime after Muhammad's death, was responsible for the schism that split the Muslim world into the Sunni and Shiite camps, a split we are very much aware of in our world today. Muhammad explained something else to Dante. He explains the way the sinners in this ditch are different from all those others we've seen. Everywhere else, the sinners have a punishment and suffer it. The thieves have a little variety, as we saw. Sometimes they have a human form, but sometimes they collapse into ashes and then reform, and sometimes lose their form altogether into something serpentine. But here, in the Bolgia of the Sowers of Discord, the sinners actually heal up. Muhammad tells Dante that as they walk, or limp, or crawl, around this circle, their wounds gradually close up, and they are whole again. But then, when they complete the circle, they have to present themselves before a devil who stands there with a sword and cuts them back into the wounded figures they had been before. So it seems it's not the wounds that are the most painful, but the actual wounding, that razor-sharp devil sword slicing into them, and as they walk, knowing they're going to be sliced into again and again and again, they are receiving in return the pain they inflicted on their community by spreading scandal or promoting schisms or divisions in the society. Those are the sowers of discord. But what then do we do in a society that has been broken into divisions? Well, here's Leonard Cohen with an eerie song about our response to this discord. There is a war, he says, between the rich and the poor, a war between the man and the woman, and between so many others, including between those who say there is a war and those who say there isn't. There's no escape for us in the world, and so, Leonard tells us, we'd do better to engage in this war in some ways rather than run away. Why don't you come on back to the war? Don't be a tourist. Why don't you come on back to the war before it hurts us? Why don't you come on back to the war? Let's all get nervous. Is he promoting the discord, or is this an irony we are meant to smile knowingly at?
There is a war between the rich and poor, a war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the ones who say there is a war and the ones who say that there isn't. Why don't you come on back to the war? That's right, get in it. Why don't you come on back to the war? It's just beginning. Well, I live here with a woman and a child. The situation makes me kind of nervous. As I rise up from her arms, she says, I guess you call this love, I call it service. Why don't you come on back to the war? Don't be a tourist. Why don't you come on back to the war before it hurts us? Why don't you come on back to the war? Let's all get nervous. You cannot stand what I become. You much prefer the gentleman I was before. I was so easy to defeat. I was so easy to control. I didn't even know there was a war. Why don't you come on back to the war? Don't be embarrassed. Why don't you come on back to the war? You can still get married. There is a war between the rich and poor, a war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the left and right, a war between the black and white, a war between the odd and the even. Why don't you come on back to the war? Take up your tiny burden. Why don't you come on back to the war? Let's all get even. Why don't you come on back to the war? Can't you hear me speaking?
Leonard Cohen, There Is a War, from his 1974 album with the intriguing title New Skin for the Old Ceremony. And here's another old ceremony, our station identification. You are listening to Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, on Cambridge 105. We're looking at the 28th canto of Dante's Inferno, depicting the state of soul of those who stir up divisions in society, the sowers of discord.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight. It's Cambridge 105. Community radio in your city.
So, Dante was standing there, fascinated to see Muhammad and to listen to his account of what is going on in this ninth ditch of the eighth circle of hell. And Muhammad is suddenly struck by the oddity of having someone up there looking down on him. Who are you, he says to Dante. Who are you hanging around on that bridge, staring down at us? What are you doing, delaying your arrival at the deeper part of hell you're destined for? Leave him alone, Virgil says. He's not dead. I'm leading him through hell here, circle after circle, per dar lui esperienza piena, to give him full experience of these infernal matters. And of course, through Dante, to give greater experience of what happens to our soul when we lose the good of our intellect and break down the bonds that unite us into one common community. But wait, wait, this is not a private discussion just between Dante and Virgil and Muhammad. Lots of figures down there can hear what's going on, and more than 100 souls suddenly stop and gape at Dante up there, forgetting about their own pain for a moment. Muhammad then ends by advising Dante, when he returns to the outer world, to warn Fra Dolcino that he'd better look out because he's destined to join the rest of them in the ninth bolgia. Who was Fra Dolcino? He was a schismatic, a fanatic perhaps, who took the Franciscan profession of poverty to an extreme and formed an order of men and women, the Apostolic Brethren, who roamed the countryside, begging and preaching a return to Christ-like simplicity of living. We know the way the press today is suspicious of anyone promoting radical ideas and slants all the news against such a person, and that's what happened with Fra Dolcino, who was accused of being a heretic, advocating the abolition of private property and dissolving the bonds of marriage in favor of free love. A few years after Dante is supposed to be taking this journey into hell, Fra Dolcino and his brotherhood and sisterhood were captured. Fra Dolcino was burned at the stake. You can read more about this moment in church history in Umberto Eco's novel The Name of the Rose, in which there is a gruesome description of what they did to Fra Dolcino before burning him, blinding him and cutting off several parts of his body, including private parts, and exposing him naked in a public arena to charge blindly around and around, howling in pain. Did Dante have this in mind when he brought his name into this region of hell, full of figures sliced up and dismembered?
Govinda, Govinda, Hari, Govinda, Govinda, Hari.
Well, that was Govinda, Govinda, Hari, Hari. A beautiful Sikh healing song by Sanatam Kaur. Enough of all that bloodshed. I thought we needed a few minutes of healing, peace, before we proceeded further. Well, we've heard from Muhammad, whom, Dante tells us, we must picture all that while having stopped in mid-pace, one foot raised as he spoke, and now, putting his foot down, he continues on his way and out of the story. Oh, look, here comes someone else, stopping with the others to gape at Dante. This man is pretty mangled. He's already, His throat is pierced through, his nose is cut off all the way from his eyebrows down, and he has only one ear left. This is Pierre da Medicina, apparently someone whom Dante knew personally, though we know very little of his activities or why he should be here. He wants to speak to Dante, but he can't speak with his windpipe cut, so he uses his hands to open the gap in his throat to let his breath and his speech come out that way. He goes on for some time about the political divisions current in Italy. We needn't go into them here, except to notice that they form the political parallel to Muhammad's talk about religious divisions. Then Pierre points out the ancient Roman curio and opens curio's mouth to show that his tongue has been cut out at the root and so he cannot talk. That's a fitting punishment for this man who had advised Julius Caesar to cross the Rubicon and bring his army, illegally, into Italy. A bold act that led to the long civil war that ultimately destroyed the Roman Republic. Curio encouraged, if not actually sowed, this discord that shook the known world. Next up comes Mosca dei Lamberti, raising the stumps of his arms, his hands having been chopped off. And as he raises his arms, the blood from the wound splatters all over his face. "Hey, you know who I am, don't you?" he says. He was the one who advised that first murder, almost a century before our story takes place, that began the horrible political antagonism between the Guelph and Ghibelline factions, which divided much of Italy down into Dante's times and was, in fact, responsible for Dante's exile. Notice, he was not the one who actually committed the murder that started the quarrel. That person would be higher up in the circle of the violent, immersed in the river of boiling blood. No, Mosca's deed was worse. He was the one who thought of the murder and counseled others to carry it out. Notice, too, the way Dante balances Curio's counsel that started severe civil strife in the ancient world with Mosca's counsel that started severe civil strife in Dante's contemporary world. All this political strife, all these people so ready to stir it up. Every generation faces it, of course, and we are certainly aware of the way those political divisions are playing out in our world today. Does it help to realize that this conflict is not unique, but just our present share of the world's strife through all time? Here, for instance, is Frank Zappa, nervous about the violent discord of the mid-1960s. There's no way to delay that trouble coming every day.
Watching my TV, checking out the news until my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess. And when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day.
Wednesday I watched a riot. I seen the cops out on the street. Watched them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat. Listened to reports about the whiskey passing round. Seen the smoke and fire and the market burning down. Watched while everybody on your street would take a turn. The stomping, smashing, bashing, crashing, slashing, busting, burn. And I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Well, you can cool it, you can heat it. Cause baby, I don't need it. Take your TV tube and eat it. And all that phony stuff on sports and all the unconfirmed reports. You know, I watch that rotten box until my head began to hurt. From checking out the way the newsmen say they get the dirt before the guys on channel so-and-so. And further they assert that any show they'll interrupt to bring you news if it comes up. They say that if the place blows up, they will be the first to tell. Cause the boys they got downtown are working hard and doing swell. And if anybody gets the news before it hits the street, they say that no one blabs it faster, their coverage can't be beat. And if another woman driver gets machine gun from a seat, they'll send some joker with a brownie and you'll see it all complete. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Well, I've seen the fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Yeah, and you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. Each time you hear something with say, you want to go and do your in. Cause the color of your skin just don't appeal to him, no matter if it's black or white, because he's out for blood tonight.
There was the Mothers of Invention with Trouble Every Day, written in 1965 after the race riots in Watts in Los Angeles. The band was offered a contract with the MGM record label on the basis of this song only. The song was regarded as electric blues, but I think we can also see in it an early version of rap, of all things, with the relentless, rapid-fire rhyming lines. And who are the sowers of discord here? The rioters? The police? Or the television news, who make a sport of presenting the latest sensational news story to titillate the viewers? Well, we're not finished with Dante. There's one more figure he encounters in this bloody place. Along with all the others comes a headless body striding along, swinging his head by its hair as if it were a lantern. Eran due in uno, e uno in due. They were two in one and one in two. He comes up to the bridge where Dante and Virgil are standing and raises his arm and his head with it high up so he can speak to Dante. This, it turns out, is Bertrand de Born, a famous poet who lived about 100 years before Dante. He was French, actually Provençal, but spent time in the English court, where, as he tells Dante, he sowed discord by encouraging the young Prince Henry to rebel against his father, King Henry II. Because he divided these two, who should by nature have been united, his head and his body, by nature united, are now disunited here in hell, where they symbolically demonstrate the evil they consented to on earth. But perhaps more important than that is Bertrand's reputation as a poet of warfare. Here's what the Hollanders say about him. He loved to see destruction of towns and men. One thinks of Robert Duvall's character in Francis Ford Coppola's film Apocalypse Now, who loved the smell of napalm in the morning. Robin Kirkpatrick gives us an example of Bertrand's positive relish in the destructive energies released by warfare and battle. This is from one of Bertrand's poems. How pleased I am with the season of Easter, which makes leaves and flowers flourish. I am pleased when I hear birds in all happiness send their song ringing through the woodland. And I am pleased when across the fields I see tents and pavilions pitched, and am greatly cheered when I see lined up on the plain the ranks of horsemen and horses. And I am pleased when the skirmishers put crowd and all their possessions to flight, and cheered when after them I see a great host of men in arms come in pursuit. That's it. Let's all get off watching men with swords and spears come charging into a crowd of civilians, slaughtering everyone who gets in their path. Way to go, Bertrand de Born. And so, one of the ways, Dante implies, that Bertrand sowed discord was by creating belligerent war poetry, which stirred up people's hostilities and thirst for bloodshed. This is something we really don't need in our world, do we? But we see Bertrams appear over and over, not just in the films and video games that promote violence, but also from people who, in Zappa's words, are out for blood tonight. Zappa focused on television news and newspapers, which feed us sensationalist images that stir up our worst impulses. Today, we have the same kind of irresponsible reporting as he had in the 60s. Have you ever taken the time just to scan the headlines in the newspapers, both the respectable and the gutter papers, and seen the way they sow discord? But today, we also have social media to help spread all this. But we stand with Dante, I hope, on that bridge, observing the real nature of such sowers of discord, so that we can be guarded against being seduced by these temptations ourselves. And now one more thing before we close. Let's attend to one very important detail that Muhammad had told Dante. Remember what he said. These souls, like many in other areas of the inferno, go round and round the circle, and as they go, their wounds close up until they get to the starting point, and a devil slashes the wounds open again. What does this tell us about discord? Think of it. Watch how often even the deepest social or religious discord can seem to heal up and then suddenly open up again. We thought, for instance, that the Northern Irish discord had healed, but all it takes is some politician supporting a party of fanatics to slash open the old wounds. Or corrupt political leaders changing the narrative so that the divisions they have promoted are passed over, but then one more testimony comes out and slashes open the discord once again. It seems there's no way to delay. There's trouble coming every day as we go round and round that circle. But we can't rest there. These souls are confined in hell, forced by their own inner compulsion to repeat this destruction over and over. But we are not there. We are still free, and seeing the dire consequences of sowing discord, we can turn from it and not pass on scandal, not stir our friends to think ill of others, not subscribe to simplistic, inflammatory, political or religious rhetoric, even if it comes from the side we agree with. And thus, again, we can stand with Dante, gaining greater experience on the bridge over this bloody region. Or, to shift the metaphor a little, we can be like a bridge over troubled water and lay ourselves down to help people come together. So good night from me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, sharing Evening Under Lamplight with you here on Cambridge 105. Silver girl, sail on.